Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
Live from Radio Free Brooklyn Studios in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. This is Everybody Plays the Fool. For the next hour, we're bringing you a carefully selected mix of music, trivia, talk, music, and other stuff, all around a different theme each week. And you're in for a real treat tonight, because this week's very special theme is
the electric bass.
Just remember,
before you do anything rash, dig this. Everybody plays the fool sometimes. There's no exception to the rule. Listen, baby, it may be factual, maybe cruel.
Hello and welcome to Everybody Plays the Fool here on Radio Free Brooklyn. My name is Shane, and I'm here every Monday night bringing you a mix of all kinds of different music, all around a different theme each week. Last week I did a February Valentine's episode all about love, and tonight I'm celebrating the electric bass guitar. Very specific theme. But that's what we're doing. So I have a special guest tonight. It's going to be very exciting. And we're going to hear some of the greatest bass lines of all time, some of the greatest, most iconic players of all time, and going to talk a lot about the bass. But let's get right into the first set here. We're going to start things off with a classic Motown song, which features some great bass playing. And it was suggested by tonight's guest. So you hear all about it just after the set ends. This is going to be the Four Tops kicking us off with the song Bernadette. Here on Everybody Plays the Fool, you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
I'm well aware. Just like we can hit too. could be gone. And all the way was in vain. Cause in an instant it could be gone.
Everybody Plays the Fool here on Radio Free Brooklyn. And that was the first set of music that's celebrating the electric bass. And you just heard the Four Tops with Bernadette, then Jaco Pastorius with Come On, Come On Over, then Graham Central Station with the song Water, and closed out with Esperanza Spalding with the song Funk the Fear. And those last three, at least, were all bassist-led bands. Which I think is a good thing for tonight. And I'm joined here tonight by a bassist who knows a lot more about this topic than I do. And that's Mr. John Montagna. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Shane?
I'm doing very well.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for being here. John is a bassist, a songwriter, a guitarist as well sometimes.
Sure.
You do some writing, some blogging, that kind of stuff?
Yes, I do.
Man About Town?
Sure.
Raconteur?
Yes. All those things. Renaissance man. Is my mic on? It sounds a little quiet.
Yes.
All right.
I think the other important thing to point out here, since this is Radio Free Brooklyn,
yeah,
is that you are you're originally from Brooklyn, right?
That is correct.
Born and raised?
Born in Astoria.
Okay.
And then we moved to Brooklyn when I was about a year old.
New Yorker born and raised, at least.
That's correct.
Mostly Brooklyn?
Yes. I consider myself from Brooklyn. I only lived in Astoria for 9 months or something like that.
You're the right person for me to have on my show tonight.
Yeah.
Is my point.
Brooklyn bassist. Yeah, that would be me.
So three out of those four songs that we just heard were recommended by you tonight. Anything you want? Oh, I forgot to say, Four Tops Bernadette, that is James Jamerson from the Funk Brothers.
That is correct.
Anything about that you want to throw out there?
Well, yeah. I mean, in 1989, I think it was, a book came out called Standing in the Shadows of Motown. It was a biography of James Jamerson, the bassist for Motown, for the rhythm section called the Funk Brothers. And in addition to his biography, it contained transcriptions of a couple of dozen of his bass lines. The bass lines would get transcribed, and then the book came with two cassette tapes, showing our age, of different bass players coming on and recreating the tracks. And they mixed it so that the bass was in one channel and all of the backing tracks were in the other. So you could isolate the bass and listen to it or play along to the other tracks.
Oh, right.
And I guess for bassists of the previous generation before me who had to like sit and listen to those records for hours and hours to learn those lines, it was a lot easier for me to have, hi, this is Will Lee, and this is my version of Ain't Too Proud to Beg, or whatever song he did, followed by the track.
Of course it's Will Lee.
Yeah. Well, it was Will Lee, Marcus Miller,
yep,
John Patitucci, Gerald Beasley, Ready Freddie Washington. Jack Bruce was on it. John Entwistle was on it. That book really changed my life. I mean, I was a fan of the bass guitar prior to that. I started playing the bass in 1984. And it was the early mid-80s pop radio was loaded with songs that had prominent bass lines in them. White Lines and She Bop, 99 Luftballons, Let's Hear It for the Boy. There were a lot of songs where the bass line was kind of like the hook of the song.
Yeah, I mean, I read your, you wrote a thing last year about like your favorite 80s bass lines.
Oh, for Culture Sonar. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the top, my top 10 80s bass lines. Yeah.
And you know, that never stood out to me as an era of prominent bass lines in specific. And looking back, of course it is. And that makes sense to me. But it didn't, because it's so, you think about horrible gated electronic snares.
Of course.
You know? And you think about synths and all of the good and the bad that comes along with that.
Right.
And I just hadn't really thought of it as like an era of the bass as much as I would say mid to late 70s,
sure,
for instance. And sure, it was really nice to read it because there were a couple things in there that sort of stood out to me, like the, was it the Madonna song or it was
Borderline?
A synth and bass guitar, yeah, doubling each other. To
Borderline,
get that.
Yeah. 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 I forget the synth bassist's name, but the bass guitar was Anthony Jackson. I guess I was looking for it. Once I was a bass player.
Sure.
I started paying attention to the radio. I mean, the radio was always on in the car. You know, we were surrounded by music all the time in those days. And I guess I just was searching for it, and I noticed it, and I was going out of my way to learn some of these parts. And then I fell in love with the music of the 60s, and the bass lines there were always jumping out. Especially, people laugh when I say this, but if you listen to the Monkees records, whoever the bassist was, whether it was Carol Kay or Joe Osborne or Peter Tork, the bass line was always like right there on top of the mix, jumping out, and there was always a counter melody going on. And that really influenced how I heard the bass and its function in the music. But I didn't really become a fan of the history of our instrument until the Jamerson book came out. Like that book really changed my life. So when you asked for bass-centric songs, had to be at least one Jamerson in there, and Bernadette was the one that
came to
mind. And
it's a really, really good example of like an inventive bass line that pushes the song along.
Correct.
And in a way that like people enjoy it whether they recognize what it is or not. And I think that's a really, the sort of unsung hero thing about bassists.
Yes.
That's one of the best examples of it, where it's like, man, this is a great song, and nobody would think that. You wouldn't feel it in the same way if it weren't for that sort of propulsive, really interesting, like melodic bass line going on.
That is how I put food on my table, is being that guy that you don't notice until he's not there.
Right.
I mean, you know, besides the fact that it's like, what do you mean John can't make it? You know, but I remember a passage in Sting's autobiography where he had been playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
He and his buddy had been playing guitar together, and they had both reached a point where his friend was getting a lot better at the guitar than he was. Somebody made the suggestion to Sting that he pick up the bass, and he started to realize, wow, a chord isn't a chord until it has a bass note. And if I play long, sustained quarter notes, it's going to feel differently than if I play staccato eighth notes. And so he realized that even though the bass doesn't put you in the spotlight as much, you can quietly wield a lot more power and control. I forget how he puts it. It's very poetic the way he describes it.
That's a good point. You can change what the chord is just by changing
the
bass.
It would be a quieter glory that I would seek, or something, some kind of poetic way that he puts it. And I guess subconsciously for me, that was the attraction of, you know, besides the fact that nobody else played the bass, I just always became the bass player by default because I had one and I could play it. Everybody else was a guitar player. But I really became a fan of the instrument once I heard the Jamerson got the Jamerson book. And then once I got to Berkeley and I studied with a teacher named Danny Morris, shout out to Danny Mo, he taught a class called Contemporary Electric Bass Styles, which is basically 20 guys in a room and Danny walking to the front of the class with a cassette. I'm giving away my age again. All right, guys, Jerry Jamont, check it out. And he would put a tape in and we would sit and listen to all the old Aretha Franklin tracks and Wilson Pickett and, you know, check out what he's doing here. Listen to how he's locking in with the drums. You hear how he's pushing the time or pulling it back. You know, that's when I really became a fan of the instrument and of its history.
Right. And we'll talk a little bit more about the history here tonight.
Okay.
I should just say the other songs we heard there, Jaco Pastorius, obviously, he's the bass player on that. Graham Central Station, Larry Graham, and as Frances Spaulding, again, she's playing electric bass on that. So a lot of people get into playing bass because somebody else is better at guitar. I've heard that story a bunch of times.
Historically, there's a lot of people that, you know, someone had to do it. You know, that the famous story about the Beatles when they were in Hamburg and Stu Sutcliffe was going to stay behind and be with Astrid and concentrate on his painting. And someone had to play the bass and John and George both refused.
Isn't that interesting how it's an instrument that so many people accidentally land on? And then the fact that you can be so good at it after that, I don't know. It's like, I think it's interesting to see something that people take to so well when they didn't even really choose the thing in the first place. Just sort of landed on it.
That can happen with anything.
Sure.
It's people that discover that they have a gift for any kind of skill, you know. I just think when you've got, you know, most bands start as like a group of friends going like, hey, let's start a band.
Right.
And nobody thinks, yeah, well, I'll play the instrument that nobody really notices. Like everyone wants to be in the front and get all the attention. But I think there are also, I mean, I've read enough interviews in Bass Player magazine with guys that said, like, you know, yeah, when I watched the Jackson 5, I used to watch, who played bass with them? Was it Jermaine? It was one of the, I forget which of the Jackson brothers was the bass player.
Mike, if you're listening, I'm sorry. We should know the answers.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, but I also, like I said, I grew up in the 80s when there were a lot of prominent bass lines on the radio, and there were also a handful of bands where the bassist was the lead singer, apart from Sting and the Police. You had Richard Page from Mr. Mister. You know, you'd see John Taylor from Duran Duran, and I remember seeing John Taylor thinking, like, that's the coolest looking guy ever. I want to be like that guy, you know. I mean, it is one of those instruments that, you know, people will gravitate to out of necessity, not because they're not as good at guitar. Although, I just figured out recently that my four primary influences, the Mount Rushmore of rock bass, I like to call them, Paul McCartney, John Entwistle, Jack Bruce, John Paul Jones. All four of these guys came to the bass later on, having played other instruments before. Jack was the cellist. Entwistle was a trumpet and French horn player. John Paul Jones was a keyboardist and string arranger. McCartney was a guitarist. They all came to the bass guitar later on and developed their vocabulary within the context of being a member of a specific band. So
interesting.
So there you go. It's my considered opinion that those four guys pretty much codified the vocabulary of rock bass as we know it today.
And, you know, let's get into the next set here, but I want to talk about where the rock electric bass started. One of the reasons that February is a good month to do this is that I found that the first electric bass before Fender was Audiovox in Seattle in February of 1935.
Okay.
It didn't take off because it wasn't until Fender put out the Precision bass in 51 that it really started taking off more. But it's so important to rock. And I should shout out, we're listening to a Sonny Rollins track right now featuring the great Bob Cranshaw on electric bass.
R.I.P. Bob Cranshaw.
Not just rock and roll that took to the electric bass, but we will hear some more examples of jazz using it as well. But one cool example that I found was this band who I've actually played on the show once before called the Treniers. And they were a rock and roll band and an early adopter of the precision bass, Shifty Henry.
Okay.
Which you might recognize from the lyrics of Jailhouse Rock.
Okay.
Shifty Henry played bass for them. He also was a songwriter and a session player. But this band appeared with Martin and Lewis on the Colgate Comedy Hour in 1954.
Okay.
I think they might be the first example of the electric bass, certainly the rock and roll electric bass on television.
I got to check that out.
So I wanted to play a track from them in honor of that. The previous song I played by them on this show was back in my first episode on baseball that I did. They did a song called the Say Hey, the Willie Mays song, featuring Willie Mays, which is a great song as well. But let's get a little taste of the Treniers with Shifty Henry on bass. And then we'll hear a couple more songs with legendary bass players right after that. This song, I wanted to pick one that featured some prominent bass playing on it. I can't quite tell. Maybe you'll be able to tell if this is electric or upright, because he made the shift right around when this was made.
I will listen with both ears and see what
happens. Here's the song. It's a short one, but it's fun. It's called Bug Dance.
Okay.
And it's here on Everybody Plays the Fool, episode 83, tribute to the electric bass. And you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn.
This is the B-U-G Bug, D-A-N-C-E, Bug Dance.
Bug Dance, baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, baby, splash!
Do you know the latest craze? When the band starts to play, everybody starts doing the Bug Dance. It's really not hard to do. Scratch and then you follow through. Your partner does the same as you. Bug Dance! You scratch your head, you scratch your side, and wiggle all around. Throw it to your partner and he'll throw it back to you. Then you're doing the Bug Dance. Then you're doing the Bug Dance. Then you're doing the Bug Dance. It's in every town and city, soon be round the nation.
Bug Dance, baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, baby, splash! Bug Dance, baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, do the Bug Dance. Baby, baby, splash!
That was the B-U-G Bug, D-A-N-C-E, Bug Dance.
Just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old. Dig what we all say. I'm not trying to cause a big sensation. I'm just talking about my generation.
My generation,
baby.
y'all. Not generation.
Sanity, all your pride and your vanity.
You're listening to Everybody Plays the Fool here on Radio Free Brooklyn. A short set there. Started out with the Treniers with Bug Dance, featuring Shifty Henry on the bass. Then we heard the classic My Generation by The Who, featuring John Entwistle. Another recommendation for my guest. And then we closed that one out with kind of an obscure one, but that was Mel Torme with Games People Play, which, as far as I can tell from the internet, is Carole Kaye playing bass.
Well, I think that's the Tops.
That's right, playing behind the Velvet Fog himself, Mel Torme.
That Seinfeld reference, I hope somebody got.
And this is, of course, James Brown, Superbad, featuring the great Bootsy Collins on bass, and his brother Catfish on guitar.
Yeah.
So let's, since you did recommend the Who track there, and this is John Mantegna, again, my guest here, who is a bass player, among other things.
I should correct you. I'm a bass guitarist.
All right. No, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, but I took two lessons with Anthony Jackson when I was in high school, and he drummed it into my head. He's a real stickler for detail, and he's a real advocate of the bass guitar, and he makes the distinction. I think when he was coming up in the session scene in New York, there was a lot of prejudice against the electric bass because people were still accustomed to having the upright. And he made the distinction, you know, this is not just an extension of the upright. This is its own instrument. It's a guitar. It has frets. You hold it like it's a member of the guitar family. It's not a member of the bass family. It's not just a bastardization of the upright. It's its own thing. And that had such, I mean, I'm still talking about it 30 something years later or whatever it is.
All right, let me reset that real quick. Ready? And here with me tonight is bass guitarist John Mantegna.
Now I feel like we're happening.
Yeah, no, that I appreciate that specificity. And that, you know, trying to pick the songs to play tonight, it was important that I focus on only things that were played on a bass guitar.
Okay.
So that ruled out a number of great bass lines.
It rules out like half of the music ever recorded.
But you know, the show's only an hour long, so it's nice to have some limits.
That's true. That's true.
But also I was thinking that same thing, that the distinction of the electric bass guitar, the history of that, and the difference in the sound between that and the upright.
Sure.
What do you think, what did it do to music in terms of changing the sound? I mean, obviously, it's coinciding with the birth of rock and roll is not a coincidence, A, but B, is huge. But what else do you think the electric bass guitar brought in people leaving the upright? What did that open people up to do? Or how did it change the sound the sound, you know, the range of sounds that were available to people in pop music?
Well, I think you just hit on the range of sounds that were available to people. Like, I couldn't imagine the Beatles or the Stones or the Who, certainly, with an upright bass going boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Boom. I mean, let's call it what it is. The bass guitar is easier to play than an upright. I mean, not talking in terms of one's easier to learn than the other. There's a lot of crap electric players out there, you know.
Sure, it's easy to play badly as well.
It's easy to, yeah, exactly. No, I'm just saying that it's, you can move around faster. There's more sustain. There's some, Anthony.
Took you a whole half a second to recognize that.
Oh, man. This is... Oh, well, I'm sorry. What were we talking about again? I just...
It's the electric bass guitar. Maybe you've heard of it.
I just love this. Well, I mean, look, case in point. Listen to the sound of that instrument.
Right. You can't get that on an upright.
You can't get that on an upright. That's not good or bad or better. It just is. It's, you know, it had the same... Just to describe in words the effect it had, you know, what effect did the electric piano have?
Right.
What effect did the Lindrum have? I mean, any new sound that comes along, people are going to go, hey, what about this? And then, you know.
Yeah, good point.
It's going to have all kinds of effects. I mean, and it depends on the player. I know in the case of The Who, the story I read was that they showed up in an empty hall to play, and one of their managers, Kit Lambert or Chris Stamp, one of those guys, was standing at the back of the room and said to John Entwistle, "You know, I can't hear your playing. Why don't you turn up the treble and get some high end on there?" And he took that and went with it. And obviously that's going to affect the way you play. The other band members are going to affect the way you play. You know, he had to change his thing up when they switched from Keith Moon to Kenny Jones. I did read a quote from Quincy Jones. Not that the Beatles were no playing motherfuckers. Not that quote. But someone asked him, what's the single most important development in music in like the second half of the 20th century? And he said, the electric bass.
He's right about a lot of things. Not all things, not everything necessarily.
No one's right about everything, but
I did an all Quincy Jones episode of this show while back, trying to get like a full, you know, you can't fit his whole career in an hour, obviously.
No
but,
way.
But you know, he's done a lot of really amazing stuff, and you know, if he says that he knows who killed JFK, I'm not necessarily going to tell him that he's wrong, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I just think about the Seinfeld quote when a couple of years ago, Jerry Lewis gave an interview where he said that women aren't funny and they don't belong in comedy. And Howard Stern asked Jerry Seinfeld what he thought about that. And Seinfeld just goes, "He's an old man. They say crazy things. I can't wait to be that age." But, I mean, I know R&B certainly wouldn't have been the same. There were a lot of Motown tracks that have Jameson on the upright, but I think having an instrument that projects, that where the notes sustain a little bit longer, that of course it's going to change the sound and the feel of the music. And then you have a new generation of people that grow up only hearing that, you know, and then they treat it like a guitar. Somebody like Chris Squire comes along.
Right.
And says, "Well, what if we do this on it instead?" You know, I wish I had a more concise answer for you than that. But
we could do several hours of this topic and not run out of things. I do want to play a little bit of the earliest example of electric bass guitar that I could find a recording of for this show.
Yeah,
which is on vinyl. This is Lionel Hampton in France, and it's in 1953. Featuring Monk Montgomery and also his brother Wes. Maybe you've heard of him on guitar. Right. I just want to hear a little bit of that, and then we're going to hear one or two more songs after that, and we'll be right back with some talking as well. So let's get going with this Lionel Hampton, at least a minute or two of it, to get us some more history of the bass guitar.
Coming to you on vinyl. I love it.
Just wanted to get that in there. John, you said you have something to say about the precision bass.
I found this out recently that when Leo Fender first built the precision bass, he gave one of the first prototypes to the Lionel Hampton band. And I'm blanking on the name of the bass player who was in the band before Monk Montgomery. But, you know, they were on the road, you know, 10 months out of the year. And I guess Leo Fender met the Lionel Hampton band in some town, presented him with this bass guitar, and Lionel was like, this is great. I don't have to cart an upright around anymore. And he gave it to the bass player and said, this is what you're going to be playing now. And the dude, I'm blanking on his name. The dude was like, I ain't playing this. It's not a real bass. And Lionel was like, you want to keep the gig. This is the bass you're going to play. And it took like 8 bars for the guy to fall in love with it. He's like, wow, I can sit down. I can hear myself.
Right.
You know, and there's footage on YouTube of the Lionel Hampton band from like 53, 54, something like that. Early, like black and white footage. And you can see the bassist in the band sitting down playing a precision bass. And it just seemed, it's like a time warp thing, because you see this like black and white big band footage, and then the camera pans to the side and there's a guy with a P bass in the
That's awesome. In
the section. But it had as much to do with logistics about like not having to cart around the bull fiddle anymore.
Sure.
You know,
it's another one of those things where you fall into it. Like, I remember talking with the late great Bob Cranshaw about electric bass, and you know, he moved to that out of necessity, because he was recovering from an injury.
I heard that story.
And it just makes sense. You know, it was easier. He could start playing that sooner than he could have started to play the upright again.
But talk about somebody who, like, didn't turn it into, like... this is me.
You recognize this song?
Yeah, I was like, where have I heard
this
before?
Damn, this guy's good.
Yeah, right. Intonation's a little wonky, but other than that, it's all right. Should we let this play for a second?
Sure. All is called Flip Tax. It's by the great John Montaigne, and you can find it at his website. I think you can download it for free off your website.
Late to the party.
Here you go.
This is the latest quote-unquote album. You know, I had these songs recorded and I thought, what am I going to do? I'm going to do a Kickstarter and beg people to... No. Here it is. Just take it and come see my show. Like, hear my songs, learn them, know them, so that when I play live, you'll recognize what's going on. But Bob Cranshaw, talk about somebody who like took the bass guitar and playing it in a jazz. I mean, if you're gonna get a gig with a jazz artist, it might as well be Sonny Rollins, right?
Well, and Sonny wasn't really into the electric bass at first. He was like, no, that's not good.
Really?
And then he heard, well, the idea of it, he didn't like.
Sure.
But then he heard what Bob could do on it, and he was like, oh yeah, we can make that work.
Yeah.
He was resistant to the idea when he was like, I want to start, you know, this is better for me right now. I'm going to start playing electric. And he was like, no, I want you to keep doing upright. And then eventually he realized, oh, this gives me different options as a band leader on what kind of sounds we can get.
Yes.
And I can use this to my advantage. And then, you know, that's all Bob played with him for, you know, the next 35 years.
That's right.
That, you know,
I saw Bob with Sonny Rollins at the NJ Pack.
And oh, nice.
Like you say, I mean, I think it depends on the player, and it's easy to develop prejudices when you see a pattern. Like, well, every time an electric guy comes in, he does too much.
Right.
I had a guy, I mean, not to pat myself on the back, but I was on I subbed with a band not long ago, where we were playing like the first hour of the gig was like standards and background music, and we were doing a few jazz tunes. And after the first tune, the guy turns to me and says, oh my God, an electric player that can walk. Thank God. You know, because I guess apparently a lot of guys, they just play too many notes or whatever, but I
understand that.
I just kept it in the pocket.
You know, I should say, speaking of electric players who can walk, I also did an episode all about Bob Cranshaw. It's episode 29.
Ooh, I gotta check that out.
Everybody Plays the Fool. It's in my my archive there, and we're all out of time.
Oh my god!
We could do another two episodes of this. I still have tons more songs to play, so I hope you'll come back sometime.
Well, how about tomorrow night?
Sounds good. It's been a pleasure having you on. Sure. Real quick, you want to throw out your website?
JohnMontagna.com, JohnMontagna.com.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been a blast.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And it's flown right by. Thanks for listening to Everybody Plays the Fool here on Radio Free Brooklyn.